And I'm sure you saw today, Candace Owens, she is now explicitly and outright attacking the widow of Charlie Kirk, his wife, Erica. And we all knew this was coming. This was inevitable, and it was obvious. She has been on this crusade now for 3 months. We're going on 3 months. All of September, October, November, and it's going to be another month this December of the conspiracy soap opera, the drama. And there were two things we knew when Candace Owens started this. One, we knew that eventually it was going to become about Brigitte Macrone. Everyone knew that. One, we knew from day one that eventually we were going to find our way back and somehow the assassination of Charlie Kirk was going to be connected to Brigitte Macrone being transgender. Nobody knew how. Nobody knew the steps we were going to take to get there or how long it would take for us to arrive, but we're there and it has happened. So Brigitte Macrone orchestrated the hit on Charlie Kirk. And two, we knew that eventually we were going to get the mud fight. We were going to get the divas match. We were going to get the slap fight, the bitch fest. I don't mean to say that Erica's a bitch. She's probably not, but you know, it's two women fighting. We knew it was going to go there. We knew she was going to attack the wife. And now it has happened. It has been gradually escalating. And if you've been paying attention to Candace's coverage, her theories, it has been expanding and widening. The conspiracy started out very early on. Of course, it was an Israel conspiracy. Israel did it. Now, the week after this happened, after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, I said, gut level, I find it hard to believe because Charlie Kirk was an Israel shill. He always was for 15 years. And he hated me because he was an Israel shill and I was an Israel truther. I said, so forgive me if I don't believe that he was martyred by Israel, his employer. I said, it didn't make any sense. But that's where everybody took it immediately for obvious reasons. And then the conspiracy widened. And it widened to include maybe a dozen people that were present on the campus that day. And it then widened to include the FBI and the Trump administration. And then it widened to include France and Egypt. And then what has been happening lately is that it has been widening to include everybody that Charlie Kirk knew. And she's been going around for the past several weeks, hinting strongly and insinuating that his family killed him, that perhaps his parents, his wife, his best friends, his colleagues, that they were in on it, that they either gave permission for these three governments to kill Charlie Kirk, or they were complicit in the assassination against Charlie Kirk. But that is what she has been insinuating. And the pressure has been mounting. As you know, last week, finally, Turning Point came out, and Blake Neff, who is the architect of the Charlie Kirk podcast, he came out last week and said, we are forced now to formally respond. They said they're going to host a live stream at their studio in Phoenix. They said they're going to do it this month, and they're going to formally address all of the conspiracy theories that implicate Turning Point as an organization. Candace Owens was invited to attend the live stream. She declined. She said she was busy. She didn't say why she was busy. She said she would cover it anyway from home. Then she said, actually, I'll beg my husband to let me go and attend the live stream if Erica Kirk is there. And I don't know that we covered that aspect of it, but that's how it played out. Last Wednesday, Blake Neff announced Turning Point is going to address the allegations. We're hosting a live stream. She's invited. Candace replies and says, name the time, name the place. I'll be there. I want all the bells and whistles. Let's do it. They say, okay, we're doing it on December 15th in Phoenix. You're welcome to join us. Candace says, oh, I can't make it that day, but I can Zoom or I'll cover it live on my show. And they said, no, we're not doing a live stream debate. We're doing the stream. You can come in person. If not, that's okay. We'll do it without you. Then she comes out a few days later and says, well, if Erica Kirk is there, then I will beg my husband to let me attend, and maybe I can. Weird direction she took it in. And so this is where we get to today. I believe it was in response to this that finally Erica Kirk comes out on Fox News and addresses Candace, not by name, but indirectly. And this is what she says. This is from Mediaite. It says, quote, Erica Kirk, the CEO of Turning Point USA and widow of assassinated conservative activist Charlie Kirk, erupted on Wednesday over the conspiracy theories, many of them championed by former Turning Point activist Candace Owens, proliferating about her husband's death. During a one-on-one with Harris Faulkner, in the final minutes of Wednesday's edition of Outnumbered, Faulkner ripped into those profiting off of the conspiracy theories. After Kirk implored the world to let her keep the site of her husband's grave private for the sake of her family, Faulkner asked her, "What are they taking from you right now?" She replied, "I do not have time to address the noise. My silence does not mean that I am complacent. My silence does not mean that Turning Point and all of the handpicked staff that loved my husband and my husband loved them is somehow in on it. We are busy building. And you know what? I thought these people are human. We are all grieving in our own way, and they are trying to find the answer to something that happened that was so evil. They are trying so hard, and I get that. We're doing the same. Anytime we hear a leader, anytime we hear anything, we send it to the authorities. Please dig into this. No rock will be unturned. I want justice for my husband, myself, and my family." And she goes on, "For me, you want to keep telling me to come down while we're building. I don't have time for that, but here's my breaking point. Come after me, call me names, I don't care. Call me what you want, whatever. But when you go after my family, Turning Point USA, my Charlie Kirk Show family, when you go after the people that I love and you're making hundreds and thousands of dollars every single episode, after the people that I love because they're somehow in on this, no." And she goes on and on like this. The article concludes, it says, she later finished the segment declaring that she's seen the impact that conspiracy theories have had on the people that I love. She said, "And if people think I was just going to wilt away, I'm not going to sit in a corner and cry in the fetal position. This is the duty to my husband. It's an absolute honor. I will never back down." And I saw this response, and I'm going to be honest with you. It doesn't work. The response doesn't work. They're just recycling a lot of these things that they've been saying, which is everybody grieves differently. And you can attack me, but don't attack them. That's my family. They're just recycling. And you can read, there's sort of like a desperation, fishing around in a grab bag of public relations talking points. And that's what this is. It's calculated. This is calculated. It's choreographed. Obviously, they have a big problem. And the problem's name is Candace Owens. Candace Owens is going live every day, and she is absolutely motherfucking their credibility. Every single day, she's calling Tyler Boyer a gay pedophile. She's saying Erica Kirk is a fake wife and killed her husband. She's saying everybody at Turning Point killed Charlie to cover up missing funds or something like that. She's going live every day to an audience of millions of people and saying these things. And Turning Point has no idea how to respond. And they're sort of oscillating between feigning indignation, pretending to take the high road, pretending to not be affected, but also playing the victim and for sympathy. But they can't seem to find anything that works. It looks like they're tinkering with it. And they're trying a lot of different lines. They're trying a lot of different angles, throwing a lot at the wall to see what sticks, but nothing is actually hitting the right note. And like I said, recycling and cycling through a lot of different types of appeals. Don't attack his wife. That's his wife. You can't do that. You can attack his wife, but don't attack the rest of them because they're family. Don't attack any of them because they're human. Well, everyone's just grieving in a different way. And you can tell that it is, it's fake. And by fake, I don't mean that they're all liars. I mean that they're running a public relations strategy. This is damage control. They're huddling up together and they're thinking through these lines. How are we going to deal with this? And they don't have a consistent approach. The approach is not focused. They actually haven't made a decision about what the approach is going to be. And so you just sort of see this panicked, sloppy, inconsistent approach. And it looks like they're just thrashing around. It looks like they're just flopping and thrashing around and they have no idea what they're doing. They come out with this statement and they say, all right, fine, we'll address all the allegations and you can come to the studio. And she says, well, I want to Zoom. Well, that's no good. Then she comes out and she doesn't even mention Candace Owens by name. And the problem, of course, with Turning Point, full disclosure, I'll tell you my position. I don't think they killed Charlie Kirk. I don't think they're in on it. I don't think that all of Charlie Kirk's best friends and his wife stabbed him in the back like Julius Caesar. I don't think it's that deep. I think that what they are is they're a business. And I think they are grifters. I think the Turning Point is, was, will be in the future. It's a grift operation. And it is made up of a lot of different kinds of people. And certainly some of them are very suspicious. Like Jack Posobiec's a little suspicious. Blake Neff used to work for Tucker. I don't know his story. That Andrew Kolvik guy, that guy is like an Israel lobby shill. So it's made up of a lot of different like industry people. And some of them are ideologically convicted in the wrong direction, like they're pro-Israel hacks. Some of them don't believe in anything. They're just a mouthpiece. Some of them are basic bitch conservatives, but I guess the sin of Turning Point USA is they're a lot of them are just phony. A lot of them are just, they're calculating, cynical, political opportunists. And that's why everything they're putting out is coming across that way. Everything they're putting out is coming across as very thin and cheap and insincere. And it's not working. I think that the approach that they need to adopt is they need to address it head on. At this point, what do we have to lose here? Candace has the bigger platform, actually, at this point. Her YouTube channel is massive. Her Spotify is massive. Her Twitter is massive. Everybody is watching the Candace show, for better or for worse. And when I say the Candace show, I mean that as a pejorative. It's what it is. It's a big performance. Everybody's watching the Candace show and everybody knows this is going on. And a significant portion of the population, or maybe a vocal and loud and energetic minority, is dominating the conversation. And so at this point, you need to nip it in the bud. You can't do the high road shit. You can't do the victim shit. You can't do it in a way where the approach is inconsistent. You need to stand up and face this head on. And you need to go on the offensive. They've been first of all, they weren't even playing for 2 months at all. They weren't defending themselves. They weren't saying anything. Then they came out on the defensive and they were doing this thing where they weren't naming anybody by name and they weren't addressing anything directly. They were sort of making these references to it and pretending it didn't exist and pretending they weren't bothered by it, pretending to take the high road. And even now they're on defense. She comes out and says, oh, we're human beings. We're being attacked. This is so sad. I'm just trying to build. And everyone knows that's bullshit. You've got a huge Candace Owens problem. And it's a problem for you, your credibility, your organization, your operations, your fundraising. You cannot go on. You cannot act as though everything is okay and everything is normal as long as this is happening. And when you go on the show and you won't say your name, I understand the thought process behind that. But when you go on the show and you pretend to take the high road and say that you're just worried about moving forward, no one buys that because everyone knows this is a problem and everyone knows you know it's a problem and everyone knows that you wouldn't be acting like this if you didn't know it was a problem. It's a tacit acknowledgement that this is a problem. So in my opinion, you got to put down the handkerchief. You got to stop with, and I know this is going to sound callous, but this is politics. And politics is ruthless. And people might find this to be extremely outrageous. I think the whole thing is very dark and very outrageous, but this is politics. And in politics and in the media, it isn't about acting in good faith. It isn't about who is the purest of heart or who has the purest of intentions or even who is the most honest. Because if you can't defend yourself, if you're not fighting and making your case in the public square, if you're not winning, then the rest of it doesn't matter because the perception is what rules the day. So even if Erica and Turning Point are innocent, and even if they genuinely are taking the high road, and even if they're in the right, even if they're right to be aggrieved, none of that matters if Candace is dominating the conversation. If the perception is that they're hiding something or whatever, you have to be ruthless. You have to win. You have to fight. You have to make the case. And so I look at Erica and I look at the crew, and you could just say this objectively. And you know me, I'm anti-Candace at this point. I think she is a horrible, disgusting human being. I think what she is doing is wicked and selfish and reckless, and I think it's setting us back 5 years, and I think she's a complete idiot, and I think she's wrong. That being said, as an objective outside observer, as somebody that is not directly involved in this, Turning Point is getting their asses kicked. Their performance is poor, and they are losing. And I don't even know that I want them to win, but I definitely think that Candace needs to be taken down a peg. So I say that as somebody that's, in a way, sort of rooting for them, in at least on some level, rooting for them to defeat some of the allegations. So anyway, so I saw this from Erica Kirk. She comes out crying. And then I see a video from Candace Owens. She jumps on Instagram and she films her big, fat, stupid black head. And she goes, "Yeah, it's about me. They didn't say it's about me, but it's about me. It's about me." And I don't know how you look at this person and are not filled with disgust, especially as a man. If you're a woman, I get it. I think that women are easily manipulated. And I think that women tend to be suckers for things like this. I don't understand how any man could look at that Instagram video she posted and not be overwhelmed with disgust. She goes live on Instagram or on her story, and she goes, "Yeah, it's about me. They don't say it's about me, but it's about me, and it's all about me, and it's me, me, me." And she's literally, she's giddy. She is lit up like one of these Christmas trees. She's lit up. Her expression is bright. They're talking about me, 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 me. It's all about me. She goes, "And I'm going to go live and I'm going to talk about what they said about me." You can read it on her face. She literally could not be happier. She is elated. It is orgasmic. It is orgiastic exuberance that she was directly attacked by Erica Kirk. And you want to know why? Because she knew that when she went live today, everybody was going to be watching to see the counter. Because that's what this is now. That's what this is. It is a soap opera. It is a big soap opera. It is a serial. It is a true crime series where the investigators are now the main characters. That's what this is. And it is a tit for tat every day. Oh, this changes everything. This is going to blow the lid on the conspiracy. Oh, Turning Point responded. Here we go. Now I got to say something. And you look at the thumbnail. The thumbnail of the video, it's Erica off to the side and Candace is looking at her. Oh, well, so smug, so giddy, gleeful. And there's a word for this. It's called narcissistic supply. Narcissistic supply. It doesn't matter what kind of attention it is, positive, negative. It is a black hole of female narcissism. She is elated that she gets to once again redirect everything about this conversation to being about her and her crusade and how she's the only one who's doing this because she's the only one with integrity. She's the only one that isn't two-faced in politics. She's the only one. She is the chosen one. That's the narrative now. I watched her show last week. She's talking about her time with Charlie and how they used to laugh and have fun. She goes, and we didn't understand politics. She goes, I don't understand politics. I don't understand being two-faced and dishonest. You know, I'm not like that. And it's like, do you hear yourself? Every show, it's like, I'm just the bad. I'm a good person. I'm mine. It's all me. So she does her show. And Candace responds to Erica Kirk, and she jumps in. And Candace rips Erica Kirk to pieces. And honestly, she said a lot of, I don't know if she stole my talking points, but she did say a lot of things about Erica Kirk that are true. She said, you know, here's the thing. Erica is not a grieving widow, or she's not just a grieving widow. Candace says she's also the chairman of Turning Point USA. She said, and when your organization is being attacked, you can't weaponize the compassion or sympathy over your dead husband for your entire portfolio of companies now. Your husband got shot and killed. You're obviously grieving as the widow, but now you've stepped up as the chairman of a multi-million dollar group. It's an umbrella group. There's many properties. And what, now we can't critique or attack those things because you're a widow? She goes, that doesn't work. Now, here's what I have to say about that. While that is true, and that's something that I said, because I said something similar about Erica Kirk. I said, we don't really know who she is. She's being asked if she'll endorse J.D. Vance. I don't know what her endorsement means. We don't know who she is. So what I said at the beginning of this whole saga is that I'm sort of skeptical of her. I don't know who she is. And it seems like they're grooming her to be a political figure. I said, and that warrants scrutiny. She doesn't deserve scrutiny because of how she grieves or whether she cries or whether she carries the handkerchief. She deserves scrutiny if she's going to be elevated to become now a national political figure, which it seems like she is. There are these choreographed, orchestrated breakout moments that she's being given, and that's where it seems like it's going. But here's the difference. What Candace Owens is doing day in and day out, week after week, is she is directly attacking everybody with no evidence. She said that Tyler Boyer is a gay pedophile with no evidence. No receipts, no names, no text messages, nothing. And she's saying the same about Turning Point. She's saying Turning Point killed their best friend because they failed an audit. There's no evidence. There's no proof. There's no proof of any of that. Because Charlie launched an initiative, a Doge-style initiative to audit where they can make the organization more efficient, she extrapolated that into there's some sort of money laundering scheme. And so Charlie was killed to cover it up. It's like, this is the kind of stuff that she's saying every day. And with no evidence. Erica Kirk comes out and says, you know, this is really irresponsible. You're attacking these people. They're human beings. That's not cool. And then what Candace responds to this, she says, well, you're telling me I can't criticize you? And there's like a very subtle bait and switch. And this is why I think conspiracy theories are done. I really believe that I'm very bearish now on conspiracy theories because of this. Candace Owens is single-handedly setting conspiracy theories back 2 or 3 years, 5 years. And I'll tell you why. She is doing a very dishonest bait and switch where she goes on her show and every day attacks private people. Some public people, some private people, and she does it with little or no evidence. And those people then want to sue her for defamation, or those people forcefully respond and they say, this is really irresponsible. This is not true. This is hurtful. This is reckless. This is divisive. And then she comes on the show the next day and says, they are telling us that we can't ask questions. And those are very different things. I'm sorry, who is saying that we can't ask questions? Nobody is saying that. As a matter of fact, they're saying the opposite. The FBI director, Kash Patel, actually came out and literally addressed all the questions. He said, I hear you, I hear, and I'm not defending him. I think he's an idiot and he botched the whole investigation and he should be fired. But on the claim that no, they're telling us we can't ask questions, who has said that and when did they say it? When did anyone say that? Let me tell you what has been said about this. One of the prosecutors, one of the U.S. attorneys, or I forget, maybe it was law enforcement, came out shortly after the assassination and he said in a press conference, he said, I know you have a lot of questions. He said, but my job is to protect the Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights of the defendant. And what are those rights? A right to a fair trial with a jury of your peers. He said, I know you have questions. He said, I can't give you all the information because the defendant has rights also. Someone has been charged. Someone is in custody. That person has rights to a fair trial. To achieve a fair trial, they need an untainted jury pool. That means they need to find a dozen people in the state of Utah that don't believe that Tyler is guilty or that don't believe that it's some grand conspiracy. They need an untainted jury pool. So what the state actually said is, your questions are valid. I am constrained by the Constitution. Unfortunately, I cannot answer them. No one said you can't ask questions. Kash Patel, in fairness, put out on Twitter, he said, I know there are questions about the bullet trajectory, about a second shooter, about these visual artifacts, about blah, blah, blah. He listed all those things. He said, and rest assured, we're going to investigate them. Now, whether you think he means what he says or not, that's up to you to decide. Like I said, I don't like Kash Patel. I'm not defending him. I think he botched this. He's done a terrible job. But at no point did Kash Patel say, you can't ask questions, and neither did Turning Point. Blake Neff went live last Wednesday and said, we're going to address everything like this, this. He gave specific examples. He said, we're going to address everything formally next week. So no, at no point has anybody said, you can't ask questions. And no one's even in a position to enforce that anyway. What people are saying is you need to be more responsible with the information that you put out. That's the problem. And this is the central issue with all of it. This is where it becomes irrational and cult-like. It's the sort of Mott and Bailey. This woman will go on her show every day and she'll just say the most ridiculous shit with no evidence. It doesn't even make sense. She comes out on her show and says, Charlie Kirk told me in a dream that he was betrayed. And people like myself will take that, okay, you said it on your show and you're literally using that as evidence. She came out and said, I have visions of beekeepers and Charlie and I have dreams and I pulled my kids out of school because of it. She thinks her dreams contain information that is relevant to the investigation. Her dreams that take place in an atemporal space inside of her mind. And a serious person will take that and say, that's not evidence. That's ridiculous. And then they will reply and say, well, what? We can't ask questions? So you're defending the FBI? Every single time, every time. Because I've covered this off and on for like 3 months. They'll put something out, for example, like the palm pistol. Remember that? Remember they said there was a palm pistol? He was shot from behind? Remember that, or did everybody forget? For like 2 months, they said Charlie was shot from behind. He was shot from the side. He was shot with a palm pistol, or he was shot from a different angle. That wasn't true. Candace said that she saw the record, and it said that indeed, the wound we saw was an entry wound, not an exit wound. So that eliminates the possibility of a palm pistol or a shooter situated on the staircase behind. But that didn't matter. They just moved on. But if you had said, yeah, no, there's no such thing as a palm pistol. No, he definitely got shot from the front. They would tell you, oh, well, you're carrying water for the FBI. Oh, well, you're telling us we can't ask questions. And this is what you call a Mott and Bailey. They make these arguments in the front, which is there's beekeepers and dreams and maroon shirts and Egyptian planes and Brigitte Macron. And if you attack any of that, they will retreat to the fortress and say, well, we're just saying something's off. All we're saying is this. No, that's not all you're saying. You're saying new crazy shit every single day. You're saying lots of things. And half of it isn't true at all on its face. None of it has evidence. Some of it's speculative. Some of it is partial. But you're saying these things every single day with apparently no discernment. The information and the sources are not being vetted. A lot of the times, like I said, it doesn't even make sense. But they flood the zone with all this bullshit. You attack any of it and they retreat to, well, hey, we're just asking questions. All we're saying is that all we're saying is something is off. But that's not all they're saying. They're saying that too many people had maroon shirts on in the audience for that to be a coincidence. And maroon is military. So those people were military operatives and they were there coordinating the hit. That's what you're saying. What you're saying is you were told information in a dream that's relevant to the investigation. What you're saying is that the French government tried to kill you and the Ukrainians are trying to kill you. And that's what you're saying. And if anybody scrutinizes those wild claims and asks whether there's evidence to back it up, asks what the theory is that unites these things, then they retreat to, well, all we're saying is something's off. If that's all you were saying, no one would have a problem, and we could debate that. If all you're saying is that, if all you're saying is we should be allowed to ask questions, no one would disagree. Where people disagree is all the nonsense about planes and Egypt and France and Ukraine and every other thing that has been included in this. That's the issue. And it's pernicious. I think this is actually sinister. I saw Tucker Carlson weigh in. He uploaded a 5-minute video and he said, well, you know, I just love everybody involved. He said, I love Erica and I love Candace and I love Turning Point. I love Blake Neff and I love all these people. He goes, I'll never criticize someone that's asking questions. What is the FBI doing? And honestly, that's just cowardice. That is either a criminal level of cynicism, of disregard for the truth, or that is just cowardice. I'm getting really sick of that whole shtick. I watch his 5-minute video and it's like, the FBI is supposed to tell us what's going on. We have every right to believe that the FBI is lying. Really? So we must assume the FBI is lying, but what editorial standard is there for anybody else? Does Candace Owens have an editorial standard? Or can she say literally anything and everything, no matter how false, no matter how reckless, whether there's evidence for it or not? And if she gets it wrong, I guess that doesn't matter. It doesn't count against her, doesn't hurt her credibility. If she's accusing innocent people, that doesn't matter. She's not accountable for that either. I'm getting really tired of this, like, Mr. Smith goes to Washington shtick from Tucker. Let's just say something about Tucker. All of Tucker's friends are in the CIA, okay? His dad ran Voice of America. His best friend, Joe Kent, is a CIA officer. His best friend, J.D. Vance, got $15 million from Peter Thiel, a CIA contractor. Tucker is in favor of Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel is a CIA contractor. Tucker is constantly talking about his friends in the administration, his friends in the CIA, his friends that are in the Pentagon. He's constantly traveling to other countries, meeting with high-level government officials. He's in Saudi Arabia, meeting with the Saudi crown prince. He's in the Emirates, meeting with the crown prince. He's in Qatar. He said, I bought a house in Qatar because I'm an American and you can't tell me where I can travel and where I can buy a house. He goes, because I'm an American. Yeah, everybody knows that's American as apple pie. Everybody knows that what it means to be an American is nobody can tell you that you can't fly to the Doha Forum and buy a house in Qatar in the Trucial States. Do you hear yourself? I'm so sick of this Mr. Smith goes to Washington shtick like he's some hapless tourist. And he's constantly insulting our intelligence with all these little quips where he says, oh, I'm too cheap to buy new clothes. You're too cheap to buy new clothes. What are you worth, $50 million? He's acting like he shops at Marshall's, like he shops at JCPenney. Oh, I'm too cheap to buy clothes. You're worth $50 million. What are you talking about? He goes to Turning Point. He goes to Turning Point USA and brings his dog onto the stage. Now, if he went to the podium and said, oh, I brought my dog. I thought you'd want to meet him. I'd say, sure, I want to see his dog. His dog's cute. But he didn't say that. He got to the podium and said, my wife is out of town. I got stuck with the dog. I had to bring him here. I didn't know what to do with him. You flew there on a private jet and you brought the dog with you. You're worth $50 million. You couldn't have someone else watch the dog? You have a staff of a half dozen people. You couldn't leave the dog with the staff? You couldn't leave the dog behind the stage? Are you kidding me? No, I'm crazy. Tucker is just a down-to-earth bro who wears flip-flops and likes nicotine. And he doesn't even own a TV because that's how chill he is. And he just likes to hunt and he doesn't like to buy clothes because he's cheap. And, you know, when he buys a house in Qatar, when he's at the Doha Forum interviewing the crown prince, that's just because he's like a fucking American, damn it. And then he goes on these little soliloquies, these little monologues where he goes, you know, we want the FBI to tell us what's going on. And don't get me wrong, I agree with that. But what's with like this feigned ignorance of the whole situation? He goes in there, well, the FBI needs to tell us. Why don't you weigh in? Are you going to give an opinion on this or are you just going to recuse yourself from it forever? I don't like these like calculated games that he's playing. So anyway, I saw that and I was like, dude, this guy's cooked. I don't know what is going on with him and Candace Owens, but it has become clear these people are now detrimental. I think they are both liars of a different variety. And I think that they are both detrimental. And by the way, I don't know what's going on with them and all these foreign countries. Tucker is saying Russia's our closest ally and I'm buying a house in Qatar. And Candace Owens is like obsessed with France. Her husband is from the United Kingdom. I don't like all this stuff with foreign countries. Something's not right there. Something is not passing the smell test there. You know, I don't know what's up with that. when Tucker is interviewing Putin and he's in Doha meeting with the Crown Prince and he's in Saudi Arabia meeting with the Crown Prince and he's in the Emirates and he's saying Russia's our real closest ally and Russia's unfairly vilified and Russia has shopping carts and Russia has bread and Candace Owens is obsessed with France and hates Ukraine. And Dugin is praising her, and her backer is married to some Kazakh woman, and her other backer is married to some Russian man. I don't like all the foreign stuff either. Anyway, so Tucker weighed in on it. As usual, it is about what you could expect. He didn't give a hard take on it. And that's where that leaves us today. That was their exchange. And I'll give you my take on the whole thing. These are really two sides of the same coin. The reason that Turning Point cannot effectively fight Candace is because they're both doing the same thing. They're both shameless, cynical opportunists. Turning Point is going to call Candace an opportunist. What did Turning Point do when Charlie wasn't even in the ground yet? They held a fucking sold-out rally at a stadium with pyrotechnics and fire and every member of the Trump administration where they sold T-shirts and registered voters, and then they sent out email and text blasts to raise money. And everybody saw Erica Kirk walk on stage in her all-white pantsuit at her husband's funeral, with fireworks going off and posing like this. Everyone saw it. And now these people want to call Candace the grifter. They don't have a leg to stand on. The problem is that they're right. Candace is a grifter, and I think she might be more insidious in a way. Who has been a bigger beneficiary of Charlie Kirk's death than Candace Owens? I don't think there's anybody. Just scroll through her YouTube channel. Before Charlie Kirk died, she would maybe get a million views on a show. After Charlie Kirk died, 3, 4, 5 million views every single video, 3, 4, 5 days a week. Do you know how much money she must be making? Do you know how much money you could make if you can produce 3 videos per month that get a million views? Millions of views every day. Super chats every day. I think Candace Owens owes it to the public to tell us just exactly how much money she has collected since Charlie Kirk died. I think that's of public interest, actually. How much money has Candace Owens made from her Google AdSense account starting on September 10th? I want to know. Because how can you go wagging the finger at everybody else that they don't care enough about Charlie, that they're doing it for the wrong reasons, while you sit back and collect probably at least $1 million at this point since September 10th? I think people have a right to know how much money in subscriptions on the website, AdSense on YouTube, which is super chats and ad revenue, how much money in donations for your security while you're at Dollywood, while you're at Tucker's Christmas party. How much money has this bitch made off of Charlie Kirk while she's doing this performance that she's the only one that cares about the truth? No one else cares. Everyone's in on the conspiracy except her. While she rakes in the dough, probably to the tune of millions of dollars. And what do you think that does to a person? Do you think that she's immune from that? Do you think that when she gets her AdSense payout on October 15th or whatever, and $500,000 comes across the finish line, $1 million is deposited into the account, you don't think there's an incentive structure there? You don't think she sees the live viewership and the replay viewership and says, cha-ching, I know what I'm talking about tomorrow. Oh, I think I found a new bombshell report, George. That fucking bitch and her British husband are laughing all the way to the bank. They are rubbing their hands together and they are laughing all the way to the bank. They watch the premiere on YouTube. They watch a replay. the ad dollars, the super chats, and they say, cha-ching, I know what I'm talking about. Candace Owens says, George, I think I found another bombshell. They're going to love this. And then the next day, the money rolls in. How much money has Candace Owens made standing on the grave of Charlie Kirk? They weren't even close. In the final year, do you know that in May 2024, Charlie Kirk set up an entirely separate website specifically for his Jewish donors, and it contained a disclaimer telling them that Candace Owens has nothing to do with Turning Point. Do you remember this? In May 2024, Charlie Kirk had a separate website created, and the entire website was an open letter to their Jewish donors explaining that they're so pro-Israel, they love Israel, and Candace Owens has nothing to do with Turning Point. She's not going to be at the events, literally throwing her under the bus. They were totally distant. And now that he is dead, she is going to stand on top of his grave, and she is going to pretend like they were the two peas in a pod, like they were closer than ever, so close that she's the only one that cares that he died. His wife killed him. His friends killed him. Everyone that he actually knew and worked with and talked to killed him. But she, an old distant friend, well, she cares so much, and that's why she needs to make the money. And it's clear that that's what it's about for her, because every day you go live, she goes live, you watch the show, and she's grinning from ear to ear. She is in her bag. She is dialed in. She's reveling in the whole thing. And she's reveling maybe more than anything that she's at the center of it. Maybe more than the money, it's a narcissistic supply. And I would posit this. Is anybody even talking about Charlie Kirk anymore? I'm not talking about his death. I'm not talking about the bullet. I'm not talking about the assassination. Is anybody even talking about Charlie Kirk anymore? Or is it now all about Candace Owens? Think about it. When Charlie Kirk died, I saw Zoomers like crying because Charlie Kirk died. I was scrolling through TikTok and it was one video after another. Charlie Kirk Q&A, Charlie Kirk interview, Charlie Kirk speech. It was young men and young women that were very conservative, that were Turning Point people, crying, saying, I miss Charlie. I used to listen to his podcast on my way to work because he was dead. And it was about his message as a Christian, his message as an evangelist. And then somewhere along the way, it changed. And now it's all about her, all of it, all the coverage of him and his death. It's all about her and her fight and her struggle and how she's the center of it and she's next and they're trying to kill her and she's the only one telling the truth and she's got another story. And she could not be happy. She didn't even care about that. She could not be happier. Even when she memorializes him, she's showing old text messages. Yeah, we were so close. Yeah, he said this to me. Yeah. And I said it before. I said it on the show earlier this week. I've never seen a more black and white, cut and dry example of one person's personal flaws and defects, one person's character defects causing so much harm to society at large. Like I said, because you can look at other people like a Gavin Newsom. You could look at somebody like a Joe Biden, and you could say they're part of a system. To the extent that they cause a detriment to society, is it because of their own personal flaws? Or is the detriment reflective of the kinds of incentives that there are in the system? You know, people want to be president. People want to be the top Democrat. They do what they need to do. They say what they need to say. But the things that they produce are not reflective of their own personality. Their own personal flaws and attributes don't actually shape what they're doing. Rather, they are shaped by the system they're a part of. This is entirely different. And what I'm, to put it simply, if Candace were not doing this, this would not be happening. If she were not going live cynically every day exploiting this, it wouldn't be happening. No one else would be doing it. And there would be no hysteria and paranoia over this. People might have some lingering doubts and questions about the assassination. People would be eager to see the case against Tyler Robinson and what the evidence is. People would still be talking about it. But there would no one would be connecting it to Brigitte Macron. Nobody be taking it there. Nobody be talking about Egyptian planes and maroon shirts. Nobody be motherfucking Erica Kirk and Turning Point USA. This is just her. Like, she's doing that unnecessarily because it feeds her ego and it makes her richer. And it's hurting the country. It's hurting the conversation. It's setting back the credibility of anybody that has ever doubted the FBI, actually, on anything. Because it's so reckless. And it has to stop. Somebody's going to have to put an end to it. And like I said, I'm going to watch the stream on Monday. And I, listen, a lot of people don't have the resources or the brain power to do this. If Turning Point is not successful, I'm going to put it together and I am going to blow a gaping fucking hole in her credibility that she will not recover from. I will tell her entire story that nobody knows, her spook-ass, weird husband. I'll tell the story about her donor, who is a Scientologist. I'll tell the story about Rebecca Mercer. I'll tell the story about how she was suing people for racism and doxing conservatives. We'll tell the whole story. We will blow a giant hole in her credibility that she will never be able to put back together because this has to stop. It's ridiculous. A whole country is being held hostage by this ridiculous black narcissist, this idiot. And that's what she is. It's a shame. You know, I really admire Tim Pool. He's really, there's no love lost between me and Tim Pool. But I admire how Tim Pool stood up to her. That being said, he goes, oh, she's a genius. He had her flying henchman, the gay pedophile, on the week before. And Tim Pool says, she's a genius. She's not a genius. She's a fucking idiot. And everybody needs to be clear about that. Let's just drop the pretense. She is not genius. She's not even smart. She is a fucking idiot. The only thing that she knows how to do instinctually is manipulate. That's it. Today she said Erica Kirk needs to compartmentalize her business and her personal life. But she didn't say compartmentalize. She said compartmentalize. 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 Erica Kirk is going to bury the story because she can't compartmentalize. Shit, she can't compartmentalize. She can't compartmentalization. She can't compartmentalize and all that. She can't compartmentalize that. She's a fucking idiot. I've never seen a stupider person have a bigger platform. Honest to God. I mean, say what you want about Tucker. He's no dummy. He may be dishonest, but he's no dummy. And say what you want about a lot of these people. They're smarter than you give them credit for. This person's a fucking retard. And a malicious, she's just a sick person. So it has to stop. Anyway, I'll stop my rant about it, but she's driving it to this point, and I'm going to have to be the Dark Knight here. It's sort of funny. All these conservatives that were trashing me and hating on me, now they're counting on me. Now they're counting on me to take her down. Erica couldn't do it. Blake Neff couldn't do it. I can. And they know that. So a lot of them are cheering me on. They're saying, I hate Nick. I don't agree with Nick, but he's right on this. Because I'm a true believer. I'm a true believer and I know what I'm talking about. But anyway, so that's where we are with the whole conspiracy. It's really, and here's what I really hate about it at the end of the day. There's no integrity. There's absolutely no integrity. What I strive to do on the show more than anything else is tell the truth. I'm pro-truth. that numbskull Ian Carroll said, you know, you're on this side and we're on this side. I'm on the side of the truth. I go where the truth is. The truth leads and I follow. He goes, you're vulnerable. People don't like what you're saying. You're with these people and we're over here. Do you think this is a team sport? I don't got a fucking jersey on, pal. I didn't sign a contract. I go where the truth leads. And what led me to believe in my convictions about the Jews and Israel, it's because that's where the truth is. What led me to my conviction in the Catholic Church, that's where the truth led me. What led me to my conviction about race realism, it's where the truth led me. That's why people say all the time, well, a broken clock. I'm liberal, but I'm agreeing with him. I can't really figure him out. What's this guy's deal? It's because I go where the truth leads. And what I hate about this situation is the complete disregard. There's no regard for the truth. There's no intellectual integrity. For example, a lot of ballistics experts have come out in the past few days, and they have said that the big theory, really the only evidence that has been provided, is that a .30-06 caliber bullet should have left an exit wound or transformed Charlie Kirk into a pink mist. Because this big bullet didn't blow up Charlie Kirk's head, it had to have been a handgun or a smaller caliber bullet. That's what they say. Well, ballistics experts have come out, and they have said that this depends on a lot of different variables. The distance, the angle, the quality of the ammunition, what kind of ammunition it was. And they say it's perfectly plausible. Not necessarily, but it is plausible that depending upon these different factors, a bullet could have penetrated the skin and either broken into two pieces, or it could have angled down. They call that yaw. It could have angled down. It could have changed direction. They say that a lot of different things could have happened, and it is possible that the bullet lodged in Charlie Kirk's vertebrae. This is a perfect example. And you have real ballistics experts saying this. You have people that are ammunition experts, ballistic experts. They are saying it's not comparable when you shoot ground beef versus when you're shooting a human being. They're different. Ian Carroll says, well, we're not saying it's impossible that that happened. We're saying it's astronomically unlikely. Really? Because then somebody found the tweet from October where Ian Carroll said, it's impossible that the bullet could have done that. Do you see? So in October, he says, a bullet could not do that. It is literally impossible. This is airtight, concrete proof. It is impossible. There's no other explanation. Had to have been shot by some other round. That was October. December, ballistics experts come out and dispute it. Well, we never said it was impossible. We said it's astronomically unlikely. Okay, so which is it? First of all, you did say that. First of all, you built your whole case on that. You built your whole case. First of all, you're a complete amateur. You have no expertise. You don't know what you're talking about. You're not an expert. You're not a physicist. You don't know. And you built your whole case on this assumption, sloppy, sloppy amateurish work. You said, well, big bullet didn't leave a big hole. That's impossible. It must be fake. You built your whole case on that. An actual expert weighs in and disagrees. And then it turns into, oh, well, we never said that. We said it was astronomically unlikely. Really? Did you calculate the odds? Really? Did you simulate it? How did you do that? Did you use software? Did you do the experiment 10,000 times? And then did you measure how many times? How do you know it's astronomically unlikely? And how did it go from impossible to astronomically unlikely? Or are you just saying shit, pizza delivery boy? He goes, it's a 1,000-yard gun. It's a 1,000-meter gun. What's a 1,000-meter gun? You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You didn't know what the fuck you're talking about then. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about now. And you can't even keep track of your own narrative because you don't have one. You said it was impossible. Now you said, I never said it was impossible. You did. But you don't even remember what you said because the story changes every day and you're making it up as you go along because you don't give a shit about the truth at all. It's like you said, this is about sides. For you, this is about who is saying what and what ideological side they're on. This is about Israel. Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. You have to prove that, actually. You have to demonstrate that with evidence. Show me the real evidence, not circumstantial evidence, which is not real evidence. Not things that look shady, not things that seem off. No, where's the real evidence? But they don't care. That's the bottom line. They don't care. And people like that, I think, are useless. People like that are trash. We don't need people that exist to reinforce ideological lines. I'm not interested in that. I'm saying me as a human being, as a person, I don't need someone who doesn't care about the truth to make a YouTube video to feed me slop to reinforce the ideological line and say, well, we're the anti-Israel people, so we need an anti-Israel narrative, so we're going to fill up a loot crate full of bullshit to justify it because that's the side we're on. I don't know what that's doing for anybody. Certainly it's not doing anything for me. I'm interested in what's real. I'm interested in what's true. Tell me what's true. Don't reaffirm my preconceived ideas. That's what they've been saying. Oh, well, Israel killed everybody else, so what? That's the gambler's fallacy. That means nothing. Anyway. So that is what bothers me about it. And it's going to set all of us back because when you have people out there that are saying, you know, well, hey, we're just asking questions. You're telling us we can't. The next time something happens, like let's say there's a real false flag. Here's my concern. Let me be very explicit. There is a real possibility that there will be a false flag in the near future. Israel wants a war with Iran. Israel wants a war with Lebanon. Who knows? There could be a real false flag in the United States. And I've been saying that for a long time. If or when that happens, there's going to be a need for independent journalists. There's going to be a need for citizen journalists to investigate and leave no stone unturned. And we might need to, it might sound convoluted when it happens. What do you think this is doing to the prospect that we could prove that in the future? When you have something like this, and again, people are going live on YouTube and saying, I was told in a dream that the maroon shirt beekeepers and Brigitte Macron killed Charlie Kirk to cover up money, but also for Israel, but also, how do you think that's going to go? That's why you have to maintain credibility. That is what is important. What is important is telling the truth. Because you're going to need it. It's going to come in handy the next time. When there's actually a conspiracy. When you actually have something on the line. And this is doing irreparable harm whenever that day arrives. I don't know what exactly the point of killing Charlie Kirk would even be right now. What has actually even changed? They say there's this grand conspiracy to kill him. Really? What has changed? You know, after 9/11, we went to war with like 20 countries. So that warrants an investigation. After JFK was assassinated, Israel got the bomb and we started giving them all this military aid. So, you know, maybe we could point to that. Charlie Kirk died. And what exactly has happened? If it was supposed to be some false flag, why wouldn't they blame it on a Palestinian? If this is some Israel false flag, why wouldn't they blame it on some Muslim? Why wouldn't they? Wouldn't that be so much better for them if it was some Iranian or some Palestinian saying, this is for supporting Israel, this is for denying the genocide? Why would they? Why would their patsy be a white kid? How does that even make sense? Going with the theory that this is some grand conspiracy, their patsy that they're foisting the blame onto is a white male hick lib, a former Trump supporter, a gun nut. Does that even make sense? Why would the Trump administration and the Trump FBI and the pro-Trump Turning Point, why would they choose a white male as a patsy? Why would they not choose a Palestinian? Why would they not choose an Iranian? Why would they not choose a black person for that matter? Why would they not choose some? Why would they not choose the boyfriend? If they have their pick of the litter at patsies, why wouldn't they pick the transgender boyfriend so they could blame it on DEI or something, on woke LGBT? You know, for a conspiracy, this is pretty sloppy work here. So let's see. They shot Charlie with the wrong caliber bullet and planted a rifle in the woods. Oopsie, I hope no one notices that it's a small bullet and a big gun. Then, as their patsy, they chose a white male hick lib former Trump supporter? Why'd they do that? You know, it doesn't even make any sense. So, that's that. I'm so beside myself with the whole thing, like, and I wish that someone, it's kind of amazing because I said that about the gun yesterday. I said, why would they plant a rifle in the woods if they shot him with a hand, if they shot him with a handgun? And I saw people say, yeah, that's a good point. Am I literally the first one to think of that? But this is what I'm talking about. Nobody is effectively fighting back against this because nobody is addressing it head on. Everybody's afraid of the conspiracy theorists. I'm not. I am one. And that's the thing. The country's being held hostage by nut jobs, and everyone feels the need to placate their paranoia. Everyone feels the need to placate people that are saying, you know, Hitler fought the Soviet Union to free them from the Jewish Holodomor. People are going around and saying, Trump was secretly the president for the last 15 years. And nobody will address it head on because they're intimidated and afraid of the nuts. And somebody just needs to make the case and say, this is ridiculous. You're dumb. And I see a lot of people bringing it back to my original point. I see a lot of people making it about everything else. Oh, boo-hoo. Oh, you're attacking these poor innocent people. Oh, Erica's a widow. Oh, you're, you know, whatever. Just take the rip apart the arguments. Call her dumb. She's saying dreams are evidence. She's saying she had visions. What is she, That's So Raven? There's a clip going around. She said, I've been having these visions. I've been having dreams all year. I pulled my kids out of school. What is she, That's So Raven now? Chelsea, I just had a vision. You are not That So Raven. You are not a soothsayer. You are a stupid bitch. I clocked her when I met her. But nobody's going to say that. So listen, this is my message. I don't even really necessarily love these people. I've had beef with them in the past, but you know what? Politics makes strange bedfellows. Here's my advice. To Benny Johnson, to Jack Posobiec, to Blake Neff, to all these people at Turning Point, just call her dumb. Just punch her in her stupid, big, fat face, metaphorically, not literally. Punch her in her big, fat nose. Give her a bloody nose. Expose her for what she is. Bring the facts. Just do it. Just be raw. Be explicit. Be hardcore. Just do it. Drop the hammer. And I feel like only Turning Point can do that. I'll do it if they can't. But I feel like they're the ones that got to do it. They got to go to war and they got to win. You can't pick your battles sometimes. Sometimes war comes to your doorstep and you got to answer the door. I know something about that. Sometimes war comes to your doorstep. You got to crack the door open. Sometimes shit's got to go down. You got to win. So anyway, that's that. We're going to move on. We'll have to take a look at our super chats. We're out of time, I think. So we'll take a look. We'll see what you guys have to say about that. That's my position on the whole thing. It's really sick because you get into all these, like, it becomes somewhat technical because the problem is, I'll tell you the real problem. The problem is a lot of people actually are not capable of critical thinking. And this is something that actually, in order to respond to it, you need to engage in critical thinking. You need to think about it analytically, which most people cannot do. People mostly engage in heuristic thinking, a rules-based way of thinking. And so their heuristic thinking is like, in other words, they're trying to fit round pegs in round holes, square pegs in square holes. They're trying to find patterns. And they're trying to fit events into a previously understood pattern. And sometimes something comes across the desk where it doesn't neatly fit. And you actually have to engage with it in a critical way. You have to think deeply about it. And so here's what I'm talking about, for example. It's like I said earlier, they'll say something ridiculous and you counter it and they say, well, now you're carrying water for the FBI. So think about it this way. Candace Owens says something. You can agree with it and you're a truth teller, you're a crusader, you're on the side of the truth, whatever. But if you find an error, literally, if you just find that there's something wrong with what she's saying, if you disagree with it, if you're skeptical, they'll say, well, that's the official narrative. So there's two narratives. There's Candace's narrative and there's the FBI narrative, and that's it. And if you're not agreeing with Candace, then you're with the FBI, and the FBI is always, we assume there's a conspiracy. What does that tell us? It tells us that if you are not with Candace, you're with the FBI, and the FBI is wrong, because there's a conspiracy. But even if Candace is wrong, if you point it out, they say, well, you're part of the conspiracy. So it's all this like self-affirming loop. It's this impossible feedback loop. She says something. Is it true? She's right and she's a truth teller. Is it false? Well, the only reason she got it wrong is because they're feeding her bad information. So she's actually, in a way, right. The only reason she got it wrong is because people are pointing out it's wrong, and that's because they're paid to do so. It shows that she's right. Are you saying she's wrong? That's because you're in on it. You're being paid. That shows she's right. So when she says something, it forks. If it's true, if it's false, it doesn't matter. It always tends towards she's right. According to this sick logic, if she's right, she's right. If she's wrong, it's because she's being fed information because she's on the right track. If she's wrong, the only reason you're pointing it out is because you want to hurt her credibility because she's directionally on the right track. It's true. If she's wrong, the only reason you're bringing it up or fixated on it or debating it is because you're part of the conspiracy, which she is exposing because she's... Do you understand? And that's why I said on my show the other night, I go, you can't even argue with these people because that's what it turns into. And so like, for example, with Ian Carroll, he calls me a Fed. I say, why are you calling me a Fed? I disagree with you. He won't engage with it. He says, well, you need to look at the evidence. You're not looking at the evidence. Okay. So some ballistics experts weighed in. They said, yeah, your whole theory about the bullet, it isn't true. So Ian Carroll says, where did you come from all of a sudden? Weird, you're interested in this. Look at the evidence. Okay, the evidence is flawed. You're only saying that because you're part of the conspiracy. And it goes around and around and around like that. And that's like the definition of psychosis. I'm not with that at all. So anyway, that's that. We're going to move on. We are actually going to move on now. We'll get into the super chats. This is like such a weird, it's such a dark and a strange saga. It feels bad. It feels bad when you engage with it. Something about it feels spiritually poisonous because it's regressive. It's claiming to be enlightened, but it's the opposite. It's like this weird mob mentality where these people have deputized themselves They believe there's this conspiracy, which there is no evidence for, but which they imagine they will find any day. There's a siege mentality. Anyone that's disagreeing with them is fighting them. And it's one of these, like, it's like an actual cult-like mentality, and it's disturbing, and it's dark, and it's fucked up, and it's weird. And I want it to be over now. I'm ready for it to be over. So anyway, that's that. We're going to move on. We'll take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you have to say. Excuse me about it. A big reason it's pissing me off is because so many people are saying, oh, you're in on it. You got the check. And that's so typical. When I'm saying the stuff that people like, they go, oh, yeah, he's a truth teller. We'll die for you. Protect this man at all costs. I start saying something you disagree with. Oh, I guess he's afraid. I guess he took the check. Fuck you. That's a part that really makes me lose it. You know, Candace Owens was at Daily Wire and Turning Point USA. She's still on YouTube, by the way. And she's the martyr. I had people try to kill me in my house. I actually got put on a no-fly list. I actually got censored for 10 years. I never got a paycheck from these people. And the minute you disagree, it's, oh, now you're one of them. Oh, okay. And what did you, got red-pilled 10 minutes ago? That's Ian Carroll. Ian Carroll says you ruined 107 friendships. Yeah, see, if you weren't an absolute fucking idiot that rolled in here 2 years ago, you would know it's 109. Fucktard. Isn't that sort of the whole point, you stupid ignoramus? This hippie rolled up from Burning Man or wherever. He stopped defending Eric Prince and RFK Jr. for 2 seconds to tell us that I got kicked out of 107 friendships. Well, you know, if you lurked more, if you spent a little more time in the space, you know, it's 109, actually. But the reason you don't know that is because you're stupid and you got red-pilled yesterday. And now you want to tell everybody how it is. That's the difference between you and me, buddy. The guy wasn't even saying it was Jews. 6 months ago, he was saying it's Zionists. Jews are fine. It's Zionists. Oh, but now he knows that Israel killed Charlie Kirk. Yeah, okay, bro. And you could see it in his eyes. All these people, they got fucked up eyes. Doyle's cross-eyed, Milo's cross-eyed, Ian Carroll's cross-eyed. Eyes are the window to the soul. I tell Ian Carroll, look me in the eye when you say that, but I wouldn't be able to achieve that. He wouldn't be able to do it. Look me in the eye, both eyes. Ian, when you call me a fed, look me in the eye. No, both eyes. Look at me with both eyes. He's got one eye on me. He's got one eye on the fractals. One eye on me, one eye on the clockwork elves. I don't know. He's right, though. When we come out on the other side of it, I will gladly tip him $5 when he delivers my Domino pizza. 30 minutes or less, Ian. 30 minutes or less. Where's my pan-style extra-large cheese pizza? He's right. I'm sure we'll meet again. Honestly, he should have just stuck to that. It suits his personality. This is not for you. Politics is for smart people. You want to go and be a pizza delivery guy, you know, that I think you're much better suited. Ian Carroll would be much happier as a chill pizza delivery guy, driving around a compact with the Domino's logo on top of the car. Hey, dude, yeah, it's $25.50. Thanks for the tip, bro. Doesn't Ian Carroll fit so much better in that vignette than doing this? But that's the problem. We deputize pizza delivery drivers and every other fucking numbskull with a Twitter account. Now they all think they're fighting the Illuminati or something. It doesn't work. Low IQ anti-Semitism won. Elite human capital is retreating to the cathedral. We need the elite human capital.